Welcome to Music History Monday for October 19th, 2020. I'm Bob Greenberg, and the title for today's podcast is Franz Schubert's Gretchen am Spinnrade. If you haven't already, please consider joining me on my subscription site at patreon.com/Robert Greenberg Music, where I blog, vlog, podcast, pontificate, review, and bloviate 4 to 6 times a week. On October 19th, 1814, 206 years ago today, Franz Schubert composed his first masterwork, the song Gretchen am Spinnrade, Gretchen at the Spinning Wheel, for solo voice and piano on a text by Johann von Goethe. Schubert was 17 years old. It is an enduring and, in the end, unanswerable question. How many songs did Franz Schubert compose? It's not that various sources haven't tried to answer the question. For example, according to volume 20 of the Schubert Gesamtausgabe, the Schubert Complete Edition, a massive project completed only in the 1890s, Schubert composed 603 songs. According to the Belgian musicologist and Schubert scholar Reinhard van Hurix, 1918 to 1997, writing in his Thematic Catalog of Schubert's Works, New Editions, Corrections, and Notes, published in 1976, Schubert composed 660 songs. Not to be outdone, the English Schubert scholar Maurice John Edwin Brown, writing in his Essays on Schubert, Macmillan, 1966, claims that Schubert composed 708 songs. For your information, in a lecture I gave at San Francisco's Herbst Theater on February 25, 2003, entitled Schubert on the Wings of His Songs, I indicated that he had composed 637 songs. I know I wouldn't have made that number up, but presently I can't for the life of me figure out where I came up with it. Most sources simply play it safe, indicating that Schubert composed over 600 songs, or over 610 songs, or over whatever number of songs. The discrepancy in numbers arises from what should or should not be counted as being a Schubert song. For example, Schubert left a large number of songs incomplete, many of which have since been completed by others, published and recorded as being Schubert's own. Should these be counted? We know of a number of Schubert's songs, a small number, thankfully, that were indeed written but have since been lost. Should these be counted? Should we count only songs for solo voice and piano, or might we additionally count songs for solo voice and chorus, vocal duets accompanied by piano, and songs for solo voice accompanied by instruments other than the piano? How about different versions of the same song? Writes Schubert scholar John Reed, quote, Schubert was in the habit of writing out copies of his favorite songs for his friends, usually from memory, and he did not hesitate to vary the details or the key when it suited his purpose or theirs, unquote. Well, how different must such a copy be before it can be considered a different song? Such, then, are the challenges in attempting to come up with a definitive number, and why I, for myself, will never again say Schubert composed 637 songs. Here's what I can say. The earliest surviving complete song for voice and piano by Franz Schubert is entitled Heger's Klage, Heger's Lament, on a text by Clemens August Schücking. It is inscribed as having been completed on March 30, 1811, when Schubert was 14 years old. He completed his last song in mid-October 1728, just weeks before his death on November 19th. That song is entitled Die Taubenposte, The Pigeon Post, on a text by Johann Gabriel Seidel, 1804 to 1875. This song was erroneously appended as the 14th and final song to a set of songs Schubert had just completed on texts by Ludwig Rellstab and Heinrich Heine. The Rellstab-Heine set is entitled Schwanengesang, meaning swan song, and whether or not it was right to include Die Taubenposte in Schwanengesang, it was certainly appropriate, as the Pigeon Post was indeed Schubert's swan song as a composer of songs. It is difficult to overstate the importance songwriting played in Schubert's development, and impossible to overstate the importance of Schubert's songs in establishing the genre of German Kunstlieder, meaning art songs. Schubert cut his musical teeth writing songs. His first masterworks were songs. It was through writing songs that Schubert learned how to convey laser-like literary and expressive meaning with extraordinary brevity. It was through writing songs that Schubert discovered and learned to exploit his amazing gifts as a melodist, harmonist, and dramatist. Song-like melody infused his music from the beginning of his career to the end, whether that music was written for voice, piano, string quartet, or orchestra. As for the importance of Schubert's songs in establishing the genre of German Kunstlieder, he was simply the person whose songs, by their stunning musical quality, imagination, dramatic power, and number, elevated what had been a popular tradition to one of the highest art. Nearly 200 years since his death, Schubert's songs remain an essential model for composers working today. That is the lasting influence of his work. As a composer of German language songs, Schubert had predecessors, but no one who could approach him as even a near equal. Schubert's most notable German songwriting predecessors were Johann Friedrich Reichart, 1752 to 1814, Carl Friedrich Zelter, who was Felix Mendelssohn's composition teacher, 1758 to 1832, and Johann Rudolf Zumsteeg, 1760 to 1802. If you've never heard of any of these composers, haha, you are not alone. Their songs tend to be strophic parlor songs, more akin to what we'd consider popular songs today, with their aspiration towards light entertainment and their abundance of repetition. What was required to raise the level of the German parlor songs of the 18th century to the Kunstlieder of the 19th century was a body of high art German language poetry that would attract the best composers. More than anyone else, it was Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, 1749 to 1832, who created that body of poetry. Goethe demonstrated that the harsh and explosive German language was capable of extraordinary lyric expression. What Francesco Petrarch was for the Italian language in the 14th century, what Shakespeare was for the English language in the late 16th and early 17th centuries, and what Alexander Pushkin was for the Russian language in the 19th century, so Goethe was for the German language. He was that single poet who elevated his native language to a level of lyricism and poetic expression far beyond what it was considered capable of before him. Goethe himself was aware that a new German art was in the process of being born, one that synthesized lyric German poetry with the power of music. He wrote on December 21, 1809, quote, "No lyric poem is really complete until it has been set to music, and then something unique happens. Only then is the poetic inspiration, whether nascent or fixed, fused into the free and beautiful element of sensory experience. At that point, we think and feel it at the same time and are enraptured thereby. Unquote. Far more than any other composer, it was Franz Peter Schubert who fulfilled Goethe's prescription by fusing German lyric poetry with music that deepened, broadened, heightened, distilled, intensified, and crystallized that poetry to a degree far beyond the power of the words alone. The first poem by Goethe that Schubert set to music was Gretchen am Spinnrade, from part one of Goethe's epic Faust. Schubert first read part one of Goethe's Faust sometime in the late summer or early fall of 1814, at the age of 17. For our information, part one was published in 1808, part two of Goethe's Faust in 1832, the year of Goethe's death. He, Schubert, was knocked onto his keister, his buttski, by what he read in Faust, and appropriately so. Faust is not just considered to be Goethe's magnum opus, his greatest work, but many good people in the know consider it to be the single greatest work of German literature. While the Faust story is based on a real-life person, the German alchemist, astrologer, and magician Johann Georg Faust, who lived from circa 1466 to circa 1541, the essence of the legend is as old as humanity itself. What would any of us be willing to trade for unlimited knowledge, power, and pleasure? Good question. In part one of Goethe's version of the Faust story, the demon Mephistopheles bets God that he, Mephistopheles, can entice God's numero uno favorite human being, that being the scholar and humanitarian Faust, away from righteousness and into a life of sin. Mephistopheles does this by offering Faust anything he wants, including infinite knowledge, in exchange for the promise that he will serve the devil in hell. Faust cannot overcome the temptation and signs on the dotted line with his own blood. One of those things Faust decides he wants is the nubile Gretchen, short for Margaret, whom Mephistopheles enchants and who subsequently falls in love with Faust. Long story short, things do not go well for Gretchen or her family. Another story for another time. As it turned out, Gretchen am Spinnrade is the first of over 70 texts by Goethe that Schubert set to music. It depicts Gretchen sitting at her spinning wheel and contemplating, with no small bit of distress, her love for Faust. Here is Goethe's text in translation. My peace is gone, my heart is heavy, I shall never find rest, never again. When he is not with me, it is like death, the whole world is bitter to me, my poor head is crazy to me, my poor mind is torn apart. My peace is gone, my heart is heavy, I shall never find rest, never again. I look only for him out the window, only for him do I go out of the house. His tall stride, his noble figure, the smile on his lips, the power of his eyes, and his words, their magic flow, the touch of his hand, and ah, his kiss. My peace is gone, my heart is heavy, I shall never find rest, never again. My heart surges towards him. Ah, might I grasp and hold him and kiss him as I would wish at his kisses I should die. Yeah, we would note that Gretchen's got it bad, and she knows that that ain't good. This is not a sweet, happy love song, but one filled with not only passion, but at moments, agitation bordering on despair. Now, before we go any further, I would strongly suggest that you listen to a performance of the song, whether you have one on CD or whether you simply dig one up on YouTube, that's fine. If you have access to the written blog version of this post, you will find a link to an outstanding performance by the mezzo-soprano Wallace Gunther and the pianist Peter Dugan. Any number of elements make Gretchen the musical and dramatic masterwork that it is, but the primary element is the role of the piano and the steady six-note figures played by the piano. The piano here is no mere accompaniment, but an equal to the voice. Typical of the mature Schubert, the piano part in Gretchen takes its cue from an image evoked by the text. In this case, the steady whirring of Gretchen's spinning wheel, portrayed by those steady six-note figures in the piano. Writes John Reed, quote, "That six-note figure is not simply a keyboard formula. It is a musical metaphor, a tonal analog, if you will, which embodies in itself the sense, the movement, and the form of the song. For the songwriter, movement is form. The image of the spinning wheel is the song, at least in the sense that it provides the medium through which the changing emotions of the words are conveyed. This single stroke of genius establishes a new relationship between text and music," unquote. The rhythmic and dramatic thrust of the spinning wheel figure heard in the piano provides the incredible climax of the song in its absence. The climax occurs during the seventh verse. And his words, their magic flow, the touch of his hand, and ah, his kiss. Gretchen's memory of Faust's kiss is so powerful, her rapture is so complete, that at the conclusion of this verse, time actually stands still, as portrayed by the spinning wheel, which rather suddenly stops. The effect is achieved by the piano, which comes to a halt for the first time since the beginning of the song. It's such a simple idea, really. Just stop the piano. But the effect is spectacular, beyond anything that could be achieved with words alone, illustrating both Gretchen's interior psychological state, she's momentarily somewhere north of Cloud Nine, and the physical reality, the sudden quiet of the wheel within the room in which she sits. In 1902, the Schubert biographer, Richard Heuberger, correctly asserted that with Gretchen am Spinnrad, Schubert created, quote, "something new, of unprecedented power, the first composition in a hitherto unknown form, the first modern German song," unquote. To sample and download one or all of my many courses on subjects musical produced by the Great Courses / The Teaching Company, please visit my website at robertgreenbergmusic.com. Thank you.